This is Flight Training the Way I See It with Mike Schiffer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the June episode of Flight Training the Way I See It, news and opinion hosted by me, Mike Shiflett, from CFI Bootcamp. So today, we've got a nice show for you. We've got some video of our newsletters, which our podcast really has become, and with a few announcements, but I'm going to tell you what we're going to cover. That way, you can decide if you're going to stick around and for how long, but let's get right into it. So the first thing I'm going to cover is how to study for your CFI. So we get this a lot of questions about how do I study, especially if you're in our class, or the week after, or the evenings, people want to know how do I study? That's a good question. So we're going to cover that. We're also going to look at doing things, setting up you as a flight school or as a CFI, doing our CFI class training in your facility. So we're looking to partner with people to do that. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Then after that, we're going to talk about ELTs. We're going to talk about the ELT inspection and the ELT battery replacement date, and talk a little bit about that, because that seems to give people a pretty rough time on the check ride. Sometimes there's a lot of uncertainty as to what the difference is between inspection and battery replacement dates and so on. And then we'll also tell you that I'm going to be at EAA. So I'll be at the Air Venture we call Oshkosh, right? And I'll be heading up there. I'll tell you about that, where you can find me. So if you want to stop by and take a look, then see and see what's in the booth. It's safe, and just to have a talk or review something, have a question, I'm happy to answer that for you. So that's what's in this week's show of Flight Training the Way I See It. So let's start off with how to study for your CFI. So this topic really comes up a lot at CFI Bootcamp. People ask me, in particular, what's the best way to study for your CFI? Fortunately, I got a few answers that will help you. So if you're asking the same question at your flight school or your student here at our academy or boot camp, then this is for you. So let's take a look at a generic answer first, and it's a good one. So the first one is, if you don't know how to make a study outline, I'm gonna have you make a study outline for every day that you're gonna study. So every day, you either do this electronically or you do this on a piece of paper in a notebook, whatever you wanna do. But you need to identify the topics that you need to study. For example, like the fundamentals of instructing, which particular chapters, what particular items, airspace, aerodynamics, endorsement scenarios around that, FARs, any of that kind of thing. So you need to make a list and of the things you really need to do. Now, you can go through the technical subject areas in the PTS for flight instructor airplane and get the areas that are there to be tested. So you can use that as a basis list, right? And then you can estimate how many hours that you're going to need to do each thing. So I would say that you are in good stead to ask a flight instructor that you know. If you've been training with someone, say how many hours should I put into this? If I'm weak on this, how many hours does it typically take a person to sort of get up to speed on this kind of thing? And then you'll get some hours, right? And then from there, you need to create an outline for every session. So you'll say, okay, well, I guess I need 8 hours on the aerodynamics, let's say, right? And you say I can give 2 hours at a time for it. So then you're gonna need 4 study outlines. And the outlines specifies the following things: the topic, of course, the time for this session, the resources that you need, like handbooks, ACs, a workbook, anything like that you need, notebook, whatever it is you need, and what the desired outcome will be. So maybe the outcome is just understanding the topic, but not yet teaching it, right? Maybe it's that. Or maybe it's teaching part of the aerodynamics lesson plan out loud. And by the way, if in order for you to be successful in your check ride, or as a CFI in general, you're going to have to teach these lessons out loud. So aloud, right? So it means that you can't just look at a lesson plan, ours or yours or everybody else's, and scan down through it and go like, oh yeah, because you'll convince yourself that you know it. You'll say, yes, I know that. And then you go teach it and it'll be like, adverse yaw. And you'll be like, well, there you go. You know, what's that? I know the term, but I really know it. You won't know it until you start talking about it. And you will not be able to identify that until you hear yourself do it, you see yourself do it. So you need to fumble there and see what needs to be fixed, right? That's basically what it is. So you have to teach things out loud, right? So That's another thing. So this, and what you do with the study outlines is you'll create one for every study period. Then you back up from your check ride date. So you take a look at what date your check ride is and start placing these blocks, these study outlines blocks, on the days in the calendar. This ensures you have enough time. It also ensures that there's a little extra margin in there for unforeseen things that come up. Leave a little bit of room for that. And that'll keep you on track. And then as you go through it, what you'll find is that you'll say, well, maybe I needed a lot more time than I guessed on this one. So you have to add more study outlines and find time for those. Or maybe it's you know this content better than you thought, and now you're in the teaching it straight away and you got kind of get through it all right, so you can take some out. So you can update them, you can modify them like that, or you can remove some, add some. But those go on your calendar. So the study outlines, just put those dates in your calendar, what you're going to do, and then pull up the study outline, see that you have everything you need, and then go from there. It makes things go a lot better. So it might be things like just memorizing at first. I might memorize some FOI flashcards, things like that, to get your airspace to get ready. And then that's the outcome. And then later it's teaching it. So it's, it kind of depends on where you stand with all this stuff. So then the second question that comes up is the really the interesting one. And it's how is the FOI going to be tested? This is because probably the most common question. So how is it going to be tested, the FOI? And the answer to that is it really depends on who the DPE is who's going to conduct your test. I can't really tell you. I can only tell you how I did it when I did it, but that was just me. And I've seen it done a bunch of different ways. But I'll give you the three ways, I think, that that people are seeing, right, in the field. And then we can talk about a strategy for studying for each one of those, right? So the first way is line by line. So the DB picks out the PTS, opens it up, and it goes like, okay, well, its first topic is human behavior and effective communication. And then it has the sub-elements below that, like it'll have something like defense mechanisms, it'll have behaviors and theory, something of this nature. That'll be in chapter 2 or 3, but you might have something like Maslow's hierarchy of needs in there. You might have responsibilities regarding anxiety and abnormal reactions to stress. Those kind of things might be in that section. So the DP then would just begin asking you questions about that. And can you open the book? That's like questions people ask. I don't know. You know, maybe, probably not. You know, I'm not sure. So what I want to do is then, but your DP knows, right? So if you get a DP like that is going to do line by line, and you know that because you asked, right? You can call up the DP or have your instructor call up the DP, unless they know already, and say, you don't want to know what's on the test, but how do you test out the FOI so I can more prepare for that? Because if they say, I do it this way, then you've got a lot of memorization to do, a lot of things to do there, right? So, and that's why you'll need something like our FOI flashcards, which are in the CheckRide Quick Study, self-study guide that we have. If you are in our class, you already have that document. So and you've been through it a bunch in the class. So there's that. So that's one way. And a little tip here of the day, if you get a guy or a girl like that, then ask them if it's okay if you put the mnemonics, these memorized things like Reaper, you know, like car, like Fast Coco, all these sort of things you gotta memorize. And see if it's okay if you take the PTS and you put them next to that sub-element. Just the mnemonic, so it just jogs your memory. You don't have to actually open the book, but it would be helpful so I don't miss a point, right? And I think most people would generally be okay with that. And then you want to ask, when can I open the book? At what level do I need to know it? And then they'll give you some workaround answer to that. It won't be super specific, but you'll get a general idea as to whether you can use the book or not. So that's one thing. The second thing, the way it could be tested is by scenario. So we have a few examiners who just test it out by listening, having you prepare something. So you won't prepare a full-on giant lesson plan. But they might say, well, create a lesson plan about taxi operations, because I'm not from this airport. The taxi operations here at Opa-locka Airport, how you deliver that to a student. And so then you prepare that. That tests out a lot of things, because it's testing to see whether you're applying the teaching process. That's chapter five. And if you're doing things like preparing, if you're going from past to present, least complex to complex, most frequently used to least frequently used, those kind of orders. And you're also on the actual lesson that you're going to deliver, it's how are you delivering it? Are you delivering it as if you were only an auditory learner or a visual learner or a kinesthetic learner or all three? You know, so there's all these things can be tested. The boxes can kind of be ticked off by seeing you do things, saying, well, if they didn't really have any knowledge of that book and that chapter, they probably wouldn't have prepared a lesson in this way, right? And then you deliver the lesson, and then maybe you assess it by oral quizzing or by some other means. So that tests out the assessment chapter. And then whatever's missing, whatever just didn't get from the natural course of teaching, those can be one-off items. And I think that's a really good way to do it. There's a lot less memorization here because you're not required to understand, to memorize things. You're expected to use things, right? Which is really where it's at for me. So if there's any DPs listening and you're doing initial CFIs, I would encourage you not to have the students memorize things, because it's not really a test of teaching, is it, right? So I would say, just an example, right? If we take an educator who teaches the 10th grade or teaches a college course, somewhere around there, and we say, okay, let's sit down here. I'd like to give you a test on this fundamentals of instructing. You're already an educator. And you give a test like that, they're not gonna pass it because they don't know the domains of learning. They knew it when they were preparing and they integrated this into their teaching style and into their preparation. It's not that they don't have never known it, it's just they don't know it now. And does it mean they're not a good educator? No, they're getting better all the time at it. It's a craft that you hone and you get better at it as you go. So anyway, any teacher who teaches a high school would not, unless they happen to be a ground instructor from the FAA, would not pass this test. So, or took a practical test. So, but by scenario, they all would pass it, because it would be like, well, obviously you couldn't have delivered a lesson of that caliber unless these things you knew and these things were done. So then you can tick those things, those boxes off as they were finished, right? So that's the other way. The other way can be, which again is the scenario plus whatever falls out. That's kind of it. It could be, I just don't care about the FOI. You can get an examiner like that. He says, this is all open book. So whatever, if you need to look something up, go ahead. He's probably saying that because, or she's saying that because they don't know either, right? So it could be. Or it's just kind of a test of one of the CFI tests on the test. The test things that we need to ensure is that you can use the resources. This is not something you can all have entirely in your head, the entire CFI, everything a CFI could possibly do, and all the training requirements and all the testing requirements can't all be in your head. So it's really then a test of, are you using FA resources? Do you know where things are? Are you fumbling? If you open up the book and it looks like you've never been in it before, it'll be pretty obvious that you can't find what you need. But if you've been in there enough and you've looked around and you've read things and you've taken our course or other courses, then you'll know where things are. And especially if you indexed your PTS, that's another tip of the day. So take the entire PTS for flight instructor airplane. And every time there's an element in the areas of operation, for example, passenger carrying recessive experience requirements, just put the FAR right next to that thing. Write it in the book, or put it, if you have a PDF, do it, clickable PDF, do that. That's not like 61.57 is recessive experience pilot command, that you put that in there. Flight review 61.56. So that way, and if it's a particular chapter in the PHAC or the airplane flying handbook, go ahead and put it in there. And then that way you won't be stumped, right? You won't be like, oh, I think it's here, I think it's not. You'll know. You'll be able to go right to it, and it'll make the test a lot more efficient, okay? So if it's open book, like I say, it's probably the easiest right there. They might not give you a lot of dispensation because you have an open book, but I mean, in general, it's. I think it would be the easier of the three ways. So your mission is to call up your DP or to have your instructor do it, because some DPs don't like being called by the students, you know, I don't know. So, but you just want to know how it's going to be tested. You know what's going to be tested because you're going to study it all. The question is, how is it going to be tested? So then you can prepare more fully. Like one of our guys from here, he does line by line. So there's a lot of memorization involved. And so we know that ahead of time. So I prepare the student. But those people in the class going to other places, not doing tests with us, then I don't know what their DP is going to do. So I said, don't fool with memorizing this stuff right now. Do it a few weeks before your test back at home, if you need to do it at all, because of the idea that the DP may test it by scenario or some other means. Okay, so hopefully that helps you. I'm going to be at AirVenture, EAA, Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So I'll be heading out of here on the 26th of July, and I'm going to spend 2 whole days at the event. And I'm going to be hanging around at Safe's booth, which is at Hangar B. There's 4 big hangars there. And it's booth 2092 and 2093. But 2092 works, right? So I'll be there hanging around with the people there. And if I'm not there, someone will know how to get in touch with me, a mobile number or text or something, say, hey, someone's looking for you, whatever it is. Or you can say, leave word with someone that you'll be back at a particular time, and I'll try to be sure I'm there. So I'll be heading back to Miami on the 29th. So that's just there for a couple of days. So if you want to, stop by and say hello. Please feel welcome to do that. I'm happy to talk to you and show you anything you want to see, answer any question you have. I'll also be at the Safe Dinner. So they have a paid dinner, which is a catered dinner, which will go through what Safe's done for the year, what they're going to do, some recognition of some people. It's pretty minor. It's not a big speech that's delivered, so you don't have to sit through a lot of it. The food's going to be good. It's going to be on the 28th at 6 o'clock, and it's located at the Partners Resource Center, which is a new place. It's right on the in the showground. So used to, we had to go to the old terminal building, which they finally tore down, and rent some space there. Last year, there were 200 or so attended. So and there's some drinks there, too. So it's kind of like that's included in the... So you can look at Safe's website. It's safepilots.org, and get more information there about that. Now, I may be doing, it depends on what David asked me to do. He's the executive director. I may be doing a small talk or some stand-up comedy. I do some aviation stand-up there that if they want me to do that for maybe 15 minutes, something like that. It won't be long. But it'll be something, right? Something to write home about, talk about. So if you're looking to go to Oshkosh, then try to look me up there at Safe's booth in Hangar B or the Safe Dinner. I'll probably have more time at the Safe. Well, I don't know if that's true. I may have more time in the booth. But anyway, I'll have time. So I've got time for you. All right? So there's that. Next question, I just have a comment here. It's like we're looking. So are you looking to do CFI training because there's a need in your area? So basically, are you a flight instructor or a flight school who wants to do CFI training, but you don't kind of have a system for it? You don't have everything like you want to mimic something like we do, like a 7-day in-person class with an online course so that the time is really constrained. So we find a lot of large flight schools, they do a Part 141 program or something like that. They use the same syllabus, and it just takes a long time. It takes like 6 weeks, 8 weeks to get somebody, maybe more, to get somebody done. And so our program, we have an online course, which you have to take first, which the student does at their own pace. Nobody has to be around for that, just the student and the computer and an internet connection. And then after that, we're able to take that person with that knowledge, is 42 hours of actual video, and there's probably another 15 or so hours of filling out the workbook and sort of reading various things that are required in there, and the assessments, there's quizzes and that kind of thing that are in there. But what it gives is a really good stock student, right? So here you have someone who has the ability to now soak up, use the information. They've already got the lecture, which you didn't have to do, and then they come to a 7-day immersion class, we call it. And in that class, we have a lesson plan for every hour, along with all the resources. We call it a press and play syllabus. So you bring up day one, hour one, tells you what to do, how much time you have for it, any of the resources, whether it's a PowerPoint, whether it's a PDF, whatever it is over as a clickable thing on the right-hand side that opens up. So you have all the resources, including our custom content, flow charts, all that kind of thing is there. All the quizzes are there with you. You have all the answers to that. So these in scenarios like taking a person from glider to airplane, private pilot to private pilot, how you do that. All that solution set is there. So you can give the scenario to the student, and you can, if you don't know yourself or it's been a while, you'd be able to see the solution there, like worked examples, basically. So you've got all that. So that, again, allows most people, it would allow you to finish a CFI in about 2 weeks. We finish them at CFI bootcamp in about two weeks, sometimes a little more. So the week of immersion class, we do flights in the morning from 7 a.m., 6 a.m. till the class starts at 11. Class goes till 6, then maybe something else after that or homework. And then in the second week, so Monday through Sunday, and in the second week, it's flights and ground until they're done. You could do this like over weekends if you had a scenario in your area, if people work during the week, this be maybe people's second careers getting ready for that, not Flight Academy students, which would be generally available all day, you might want to make weekend times out of it. So it'd be 3 weekends and another part of a weekend, so 7 days. Or you could do it evenings, you could do it a lot of different ways, but that's available. And we look to partner up with people to do that in major markets or in areas where you have a special alliance with a college or a flight school, and you think this would be something that that would add value to your program or to you, and to satisfy this need of creating flight instructors. So, and when I mean large markets, when we're looking in addition to the to a place where you have maybe a connection with the various flight schools or colleges, major markets for us, we already have Southern California taken care of. We have Horton Aviation, which is in John Wayne Airport, which is beginning to do CFI classes there at ACI Jet Center. And we have 14-day pilot, which is in Van Nuys. And they're taking care of kind of north side of things in Central Valley, that kind of thing. So the major markets then we're still looking for would be Seattle, Denver, Phoenix, Dallas, Chicago, New York. That's kind of the areas. There could be others. Like we have a case with a guy who works with Lyft, which is a school that's owned by Republic Airlines or aligned with Republic Airlines in Indianapolis. And they turn out enough people that it makes sense to put a CFI Academy there and have him do that because they create a lot of people. So if you're in a similar situation, then send me an email at mike@cfibootcamp.com, mike@cfibootcamp.com, or you can call. Our telephone number is 650-600-1021. So 650-600-1021. Okay, let's move on. And how's it going so far? Too much information? No, not really. I think you're on it just fine. We're going to talk about ELT inspections and the battery replacement date, then we'll wrap it up, okay? So there's a lot of confusion and misunderstanding surrounding the ELT. So I'm going to clear things up in this segment. And the regulation that addresses everything ELT is under FAR Part 91.207. So 91.207 is the resource that lets you, once I explain it to you, you can go read it and it should sing off the page to you, right? So here we're going to find two things that trip up pilots on and CFIs on check rides and in determining airworthiness in general, right? So the first thing is the ELT battery replacement time or date. That's one thing. And the second thing is the ELT inspection. And these two things are not the same things. And this gets confused all the time. So let's take the regulations that address this. So the first one is 91.207, and it's Charlie. So this talks about the battery replacement date. So there's two things we need to know with I guess it's three things, but let's just go through them, and then I'll tell you what they are. So let me grab my little notes here. So when the battery has to be replaced is in 91.207 Charlie. Then the inspection is in 91.207 Delta, so two different little sections. So the first is when the battery has to be replaced. It has to be replaced when the transmitter has been in use for more than 1 kWh. So it could be that it was set off by something. And I don't know how you keep track of the hour. I really don't know. There's no timer, Hobbs meter on it. So I'm really not sure how that goes. But anyway, if you can determine that it's been used for more than an hour, you have to take it out of there. The second condition, the only condition, then the rest of it is when 50% of the useful life of the battery or 50% of its rechargeable batteries, their useful life, has expired as established by the transmitter manufacturer under its approval. So if you can determine by a rechargeable battery that you're down to 50%, then you have to charge it. If you can determine that the batteries you have in are 50% of their useful life, then you have to replace them. And the thing that always has to happen, no matter what thing you do, is when the battery replacement is made, you have to make sure the battery replacement date is on the outside of the transmitter, and it's also, ready, recorded in the maintenance records, which is where I have the hardest time with people, because they won't know that they have to find the battery replacement date in the aircraft records, so the maintenance logs, right? Usually in the airframe log. And with these new ELTs, the 406 megahertz of transmitters, they're using Duracell batteries now. And these Duracells can be an expiration date like 10 years. So that could be like a lot of logbooks ago. You know, if as time goes on, you could have a new logbook and now you're just using that one because it has all the current inspections in it, but where's the battery replacement date? In the last logbook, one that maybe is in the safe somewhere else other than you have access to. So you need to find that. So what I, for a practical matter, by the way, what I do at the schools or tell schools to do, even owners to do, is every time the inspection of the annual inspection is done, to just record the battery replacement date there. In addition, even if you don't have to, you didn't do anything, it's still good, just put the battery replacement there. That way you have it all in one logbook when the time comes. All right, the second part of this ELT thing is the inspection of the actual unit. It has nothing to do with the battery, except the battery has to be a battery in there so you can turn it on. But the replacement date is irrelevant here. So there's an inspection which they do a physical inspection of the unit. They check for battery corrosion, they check that the antenna radiates energy, they check that they drop it and see that it sets off the ELT. So they do a functional test of the ELT and inspection. That has to be done every 12 calendar months. And the most likely time that's being done is right with the annual inspection. So I think in about 95% of the time, you're gonna find it right in the annual inspection. Now, the ELT battery replacement date is, again, is a function of 1 hour of cumulative use, 50% of the useful life, and then the date has to be recorded in the maintenance records. It's not part of the inspection. So you could have an inspection and 2 days later, the battery replacement date may need to be filled, or the next month has to be. So just because you check the inspection, you just have to check and see that the ELT battery is within the parameters. So that's 91207 Delta. So I hope that clears that up. And one thing I wanted to tell you is about this FOI thing. One last thing before I break here. If you got to memorize things, if you're going to need to do that, or if you want to have some like deeper knowledge of the FOI and say, how are things related? Like the problem we have with the FOI, when you start reading the Aviation Instructor's Handbook, especially in Chapter 3, the learning process, a lot of theory, you start reading it and you go like, didn't I just read something like that like about four paragraphs ago, something like that? And you probably did something similar. And there's no document that shows how all the things are interrelated within the document. Like what are the big pieces and what are the sub pieces of this or that? They kind of try to do that, but it's difficult to do that in a textbook. So what we have at CFI Bootcamp is we have a product called FOI Roadmaps. And it's in the in our online store, you can find it. It's not too expensive, but what it is, it's a mind map of every chapter from one all the way till the end to nine. And it has all of how things are related. And if there's any mnemonic things to memorize, it's in there, right? In that same mind map. And then, so half of the book is like that. So all the chapters are represented with a mind map, which is kind of handy. And it really shows the relationship so you can go back into the Aviation Instructor's Handbook and maybe read that again, knowing now what these relationships are. Makes it a lot easier. And the second half of the book are worksheets. So it's kind of like you can imagine the mind map with missing things, missing where there's mnemonics, and you write them in. And if you're doing that, by the way, something like that, do that as much as you can from memory. And then whatever you can't get, open up the Aviation Instructor's Handbook and read that section before you just go get the answer. So that helps reinforce that information, because obviously you knew it at some point, or you knew it but you didn't quite get it, not recent, but if you read it again, you understand it a lot better. And other things you'll sing by, you'll know, and other things you won't. So that's a good document for showing the relationships and getting you ready for a practical test. The other one is the Checkride Quick Study Guide. It's also there. It covers the FIRs. I totally rewrote those to be just for part 61 for airplane single engine land. Right? So no extraneous regulations, no if, subpart, B, else, none of that. It's all straightforward, what's in that regulation. And inside of the same document are the FOI flashcards. So you've got a complete set of flashcards in there too to help reinforce that, among other things, risk management, there's FOI chapter summaries, all kinds of things in there. So anyway, those two documents are really good to have. And that's all I've got for you this week from Flight Training the Way I See It. We'll see you next month. And if you're at Oshkosh, I will see you for certain next month. And that's it. So thanks for tuning in. And this has been Flight Training the Way I See It with your host, Mike Schiffer. This has been a production of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, tips, and opinion.